All right. Well, welcome everybody to this Healing Story Alliance teleconference. I thank you all for joining in. It's so wonderful to hear all of your voices. And we are so fortunate to have Laura Sims joining us tonight, and I will introduce her in just a moment. But I wanted to let you know first about the next event coming in the end of January on the 25th, shortly after the inauguration. We are going to have, for the first time, a teleconference which will also become a swap. We're inviting Nora Dooley to come lead her program called Stories as Blueprints for Resistance, and she's going to share some of the stories from her program about people who have found the courage and inspiration to face opposition and tyranny in very creative ways. And then we'll invite the audience to join in. So check that out on the website. The description should go up within a couple of days. And if you want to be in on the telling, you've got to email me, Elisa, and get your name in the hat. Okay. So now back to Laura, wonderful Laura, who is one of my all-time favorite tellers, a true master storyteller who has been inspiring me for well over 30 years, and I know she's been telling stories for well over 40 years. She is, as she says, devoted to compassionate action, and this shows up in her stories, in her mindfulness teaching that she does, as well as her work in the New York City public schools and worldwide teaching. Seems like every time I talk to Laura, she's in some different country doing some very creative and helpful work. Particularly, she's done wonderful work in Haiti time and time again, going down and giving people really support and sustenance in really hard times. Laura has been on our board of HSA since its inception. She's the author of a number of very interesting books, Our Secret Territory, one of them, and there's a new one coming out, which is called And We Flew, Hearing and Healing Through Engaged Narrative and Mythic Image. That should be out this year. And she also has been teaching storytelling for years, Laura, right? You've been doing a program in California and the UK, a retreat that people can attend. And, oops, I had the dates up, and now they've disappeared. This summer, there's two different retreat programs with Laura, one in California, one in the UK. You can find out more.
I can look it up later.
Yes, on your website, which, why don't you tell them your website, Laura, now, and then you can do it at the end as well.
Yeah, www.laurasims.com.
Okay, so without further ado, I am so happy we've got you, Laura, an hour to spend with you. So take it away, and I will mute myself for now, okay?
Okay. Well, I'm so glad that there was this kind of rush of delicious chaos of people introducing themselves, since for me so much depends on relationship and being with my peers and audiences. So it gave me really a sense of the enthusiasm and presence of everybody, so thank you so much. And I thought we actually could begin by just taking, you know, feeling our feet on the ground and taking just three deep breaths to wake us up and wake up our listening and sharing. I wanted to really share and explore something that I've been doing in the last 3 or 4 years in many different kinds of situations that uses a small traditional story. And obviously, you know, when we have a good story, it's like having sort of the proper armor or the proper shoes on, because then you feel the confidence of really being able to feel the story and also bring people into the story. But my interest in these stories is only, in a small way, some analysis of the text or the sort of interpretation or what the story is about. I love the stories for how they work to bring people into focus and to feel embodied, engaged enough to begin to imagine very vividly, like having a kind of visual, wakeful dream that is, on one hand, a very communal experience, and on the other is deeply intimate and personal. And I feel that these traditional stories can bring so much liberation to people in many, many different ways, and I would like to talk about that, but I would like to first do with you as best I can in this situation on the telephone so that we have a basis for the conversation and go deeper than we might if I was just talking about what I do with the story. So I'm going to tell you, it's a small story, but one of those small stories that is like having a kind of ocean in a seed. And it is based on a Bushman story, and these are some of the oldest living tribal peoples, hunter-gatherers of our world, living in South Africa still. And the story was actually told to someone in the late 1800s and written down. And I read three or four versions of the story, and it is much longer than what I'm going to tell you, because the oral life of a storytelling culture is very different than our relationship to a narrative. But I think that I have found just the sort of kernel or the essence of the story, and I will post on our website or in the Healing Story List the reference, so that if anybody wants to look at the story as it was recorded by Bleak and published in the early 1900s, you're welcome to look at it. But the story begins in a time when there was no day and no night. There was no dark and there was no light. The sky was gray, endless gray. And in that time, people built fires in their small communities so they could cook, they could eat, they could see each other. But the fires, of course, went out, and what was left were ashes. And it said that a girl of the earliest race was walking in the gray, and she saw the ashes, and she saw within the ashes the tiniest ember of fire. And she took the ashes in her hand and threw the ashes into the sky and made the stars. And for the first time, the sky was black, and there were small spots of white illumining the darkness. And for the first time, the sun rose, and the sky was red and pink, and the stars could be seen in the distance almost like the shadows of light. And then there was day, there was light, the sky was white, and you could not see the stars. And then from that time, there was day, and there was night. There was light and dark and light again. And I love this little story. So I wanted to ask three questions. And if you want to answer, which I hope we can't listen to everybody, but maybe four or five people could answer. And if you start to speak and someone else is speaking, just wait. And if you don't get a chance, write it down. But I wanted, my first question really was, what image from the story just comes to you? What visual image, like a photograph or a picture, comes to you immediately? There's no right or wrong in any of these answers. So, someone want to unmute?
It's Faye, and I just immediately see the sparks flying up into the sky, this arc of light moving.
Beautiful. Another?
I just see a gray mist, and I see the young woman that was walking along, or the young girl, not having a smile on her face.
Beautiful. Poignant. Another one?
Yeah, this is Sarah DeVere. I see that girl reaching down into the ash and not... and being so brave about the fact that there's an ember that might burn her, but she reaches down and picks up the handful of ashes and sparks.
Beautiful. One more.
This is Jenny. Laura, and I was just, I just conjured an image of volcanic ash, and that was the time in history when that's just what I saw. Was just, there's lots and lots of ash still falling after a volcanic explosion.
Volcanic ash falling.
Yeah. In those times in history, in geological history, when that happened.
Maybe one more. Anyone else have one?
Hi, this is Nayana. I see the girl reaching up, throwing the ash up in the sky, and her eyes looking up, and her hand just reaching up into the sky.
Beautiful. So, what I would do if we were together and we had a lot of time, and what I do is then I have people write that down, write their image down, and then for 5 minutes just write as if that was the beginning of a story or the beginning of a dream or the beginning of a poem, and just write stream of consciousness from that image. Allow whatever association comes up or sense or whatever it is feeling to come up. And then I have people sit together.
It's very hard to hear anyone.
Really? Is this better?
Everybody needs to mute themselves if the deal of noise.
Yeah, thank you for telling us. And then I'd have people sit in a small group, only two or three the most, and read to each other what they've written. And then just have a conversation about it. And then I have a second question. The second question is, what does the story remind you of in your own life?
It's hard to understand. There's a lot of background.
I can't hear you.
Everybody again, so you need to unmute yourself. But it just got a lot quieter. Maybe we're okay.
Okay, great.
Start again, but yeah, thank you everyone for reading.
The question is, does this story remind you of anything in your own life? I can tell you what came to me in my own life was an afternoon, and I was maybe 21 years old, and I was in just a state of absolute despair. My mother had died. My father had sort of multiple heart attack. I lost a job that I had, and I was so overwhelmed with despair that I literally had set out on the floor papers in which I had five scenarios in which I could actually commit suicide. I couldn't find any, I felt it unbearable agony of sorrow and sort of loss and hopelessness. I was seated, I lived on 9th Street in Manhattan, and I was seated on the floor, wooden floor. And then my phone rang. And this guy that I completely liked called me up and asked me for a date. And I totally forgot that I was about to commit suicide. And it wasn't until later that evening when I noticed the five pieces of paper. And it was such a startling difference between the heaviness of the darkness that I felt and really isolation and aloneness, and then this sudden ability, which happened, of course, stimulated by this call that I'd always wanted, just the difference between that sense of engagement in the world and this heaviness, that's what came to my mind.
Mm. Beautiful.
Were you struck by how closely they followed each other?
Yes, exactly. That's what struck me. I mean, in a way, that's what started my meditation practice.
Oh, man.
Mm. Anyone else? And who else? Did it remind anybody of anything else? It doesn't have to be a difficulty. It could be something inspiring. Confusing, beautiful, odd. I hear someone sighing.
Well, your story, Laura, helped clarify for me just how many times I felt that everything was just gray and I couldn't see hope, and then often sometimes something would come from within that I had heard or read that would spark a memory, a feeling of my own kind of divinity or the part of me that was strong that would then make everything different.
Mm.
So
yeah.
I was reminded of a time when that happened, and I was on the Olympic Peninsula in a deep depression and lying on this giant log, just feeling so sad. And I remembered something I'd read about how it often feels like we're betwixt and between two places in our lives, and we're lost. And it just made so much sense, and it helped me to connect to what was going on with me with compassion and to take care of myself. And so these little sparks can come from anywhere. And I always feel grateful for that one.
Mm. Thank you. Do we have another unmuter?
Yes, this is Tony. It comes to mind to me just to think of the times that I've had people help me, like that young woman helped by putting the embers up to get the stars, and to always remind myself that, you know, I'm not alone with it. Somebody's out there that's going to help that I know or don't know. But help will come, and I can do my best to try to help other people.
Hmm. Thank you. Anyone else?
This is Linda, and what my experience was is that it was a time of sorrow and depression and really feeling sorry for myself, of course. And what helped me get past that, or my spark, was knowing that there were people in my life who needed my help. And that was my spark to just stand up and get going again. Thank you.
Maybe one more?
Sure. This is Beth. And it wasn't so much that it reminded me of something personally, if I really dug deep maybe, but the girl really carries something, a lesson, an impartation, if you would, that sometimes you have to take the risk and you're not going to be conformed like everybody else, but you're actually transformed. So she took the risk of getting burned or having something happen. She might not have been familiar with that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like it's scattering light and life and joy. And it just was inspiring to me to know, to say, oh, it was kind of a prodding to say there are things I feel like I'm being asked to do, but maybe hesitant or fearful or unsure, and how much it could really bless or grace or multiply light and life for others.
That's lovely. Anyone else have something that you want to share, or that an association or memory that came up? Doesn't have to even be related. I hear a breath. Well, thank you.
Laura?
Yeah?
It's Jenny. I was just waiting for other people to have another turn, but for me, it really speaks of feeling despair about the political situation and all the news that's so confronting, and just really falling into a deep hole of anxiety and fearfulness, and then connecting with really amazing crew of deep ecology people, environmentalists, who are really hopeful and working to heal the heart and finding something useful that I felt I could do with them, and actually consciously switching off the news more and just dipping into it. But that was, you know, a real lifeline of just, I'd really sunk into a deep, dark, not that dark, but a relatively dark place, and felt disempowered. And that, you know, the throwing the light up into the sky was really connecting with this community. And that's what I'm really finding, is that by connecting with other people in community, and little things like being able to hold hands in circle, all those little things that seem sort of insignificant are huge in keeping your state of mind strong. So for me, it was dancing with people, this joyality training, which is based on deep ecology, and also discovering the labyrinth and ritual and connecting to the earth. All those things helped me lift out of that dark, that grey, that greyness.
Yeah, thank you. So it's interesting, because all of us seem to have these sort of this almost random spontaneity of something coming to you, or the memory or association with something that we're doing, where we've either helped somebody else or somebody could help us, or realized in the midst of a despair that there is some kind of hope or possibility. And I'm sure there are many, many others. So maybe I'll stop for a second, just talk about some of the background for me of doing this. And I really love telling traditional stories, and I feel they are deeply personal. And sometimes telling a personal story, we have so much interpretation and association with that story that we're telling, that we really tell our personal meaning, and the story is then limited for other. Not that it isn't an important story, but how a story like that is told is what makes the difference. But a traditional story can create a very, first of all, can do what the girl did in a sense. Suddenly we're drawn out of our preoccupation and we are visualizing the story. So we have an instant experience of relief from holding on or constantly being preoccupied with something or caught in our depression. So the story is a kind of in those puzzle boxes, you have to find the key and it sort of like springs open the latch and you have some breathing space. One of the second things that the story does so beautifully, I think, is allow us to, because of the way we listen visually as we do, then we can actually, in the moment of listening, our mind and body are synchronized. Very often we're listening for what we want to hear or what for the lesson. But in a story, particularly a mythic story, so image-driven, we are visualizing moment by moment and engaging the imagination, which is a kind of a level of very, very strong, almost unconscious involvement that's visual and emotional, so that we can relax and we can be back in our body. So that provides the listener and the storyteller, actually, with more inner resources for healing or insight or for seeing alternatives and being able to hear them. Because sometimes it's not so much that you get a pill or you have a solution, but the very quality or capacity of mind that can find alternatives or imagine something different or see something visually is a source of renewal and refreshment so that we can go on. In a way, many of us just talked about that through the stories that we shared. And I think that those aspects of the storytelling, is not that the storytelling has a lesson or a particular interpretation, but the process of listening itself loosens our grip on sometimes negative or difficult situations and allows almost like a window flying open in which you feel some refreshment. And why it's deeply intimate is, and why I love asking the question, what did it remind you of your own life, is that very often we're so habitually allured by the content and what we think the content means and what it might be teaching that we forget about the multi-dimensional engagement of the listener, that while when we do focus and there is a synchronization of body and mind, there's the emotion that comes up seems to be about the story, but it is our emotion. And there's a lot of association. And like under the images of the story narrative are the images from our own lives that come up, so that we can sometimes touch a place that, if the story is too personal or too guided, triggers us to be angry or justified or have the same habitual response. So we're loosening up the gyres, in a sense, and allowing something to come up. So the exercise that I mentioned where, you know, after people have an image and they just write and then they read it, very often, beside it being like poetry, because it's, I never say write a poem, then everybody would freeze up, but, you know, just whatever you write is absolutely beautiful and very often so direct from the heart that there is a kind of expanded sharing. I think it's like what Jenny said, those small things of like standing together in a circle or holding hands or singing together. It has that quality of reaching deep inside so we're not ignoring what's going on, but allowing us to access resources of imagination, of resilience, of possibility, of seeing something from another viewpoint, or even being able to feel the feeling without the storyline we have about that feeling, which often mediates it. So I hope that's interesting and helpful. So a story like this, which is, you know, seemingly about being no light and there coming light in the world and this lovely young girl, or what, this spontaneous young girl, just evokes, in its simplicity, allows so many different ways of seeing and ways of feeling. So I had another question, which is, it's actually two questions, but what was it like to hear each other's associations with the story? Anyone have not an interpretation of it, but what did it feel like to hear other people talking about how they associated with that story?
I found it familiar and very, more than reassuring, reinforcing, validating.
In what way? Can you say more?
In the silence of some of the moments of silence of response to you, I heard people feeling and thinking, remembering. And everything I heard expressed was stuff I felt too. And I think we all resonated to a lot of that.
I heard somebody else speaking, a male voice.
It's Joe, and I didn't offer anything. I agreed with some of the things that were said, but I somehow got a sense that I was welcome to speak, was a lift. I was welcomed to speak. Uh-huh. I didn't speak, but I was welcomed, and I think there was my emotion was that I was part of the group, even though I wasn't participating, and that was kind of comfortable.
Yeah, beautiful. Anyone else? Let's have one more resonant response. So I have a third little question, and this would just be one or two-word answer, but what happened, well, not what you thought about this story, but what happened to your body, your eyes, your skin, your breath, your emotion, the room you're in, while you listen to the story?
This is Linda again, and I was relaxed. Your pace in that story, I believe, makes a difference. And I, as Joe said, I felt very comfortable and very relaxed, and the pace did a lot of that for me, your pace.
Thank you, Linda. I'll say something about it after a few people respond. So anybody have any other, something different happened to you?
This is Tony. The story felt like a hug.
Yeah, Tony. Oh, go ahead.
No, who is this?
Oh, this is Nayana. I felt like I could just take a deep breath and release, and that I felt supported in some way, that I didn't have to watch my back or be on alert.
Wow.
Yeah, I agreed with what someone said about the pacing. It felt like I was not only here in my living room, my dining room, but I was very much there as well at the same time, fully able to experience both.
Mm. So I guess one of the things we're talking about two things. Did anybody else want to say something pressing before I interrupt you? Anyone else have something different that came that you want to say to add to the spice?
This is Kieran.
Yeah, hi Kieran.
Hi, and I felt very soothed by your voice. I'm sitting on a rocking chair, and I'm in a very I can't describe the word. I haven't got the right word, but in a very balanced state of mind. And I think your voice was so soothing, and somebody used the word relax, and your pace just helped put it together. But what was very good, I thought, was because we were all coming in at 1 o'clock, when you started and told us to take the deep breaths, I think that everybody got into that mode that we are ready now. So I thought that was very powerful. Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome. I'm going to interrupt just because I want to leave us time for questions and answers. But one of the things I was thinking about earlier about the story is that sometimes when, we become storytellers, we almost worship the story as if the story does all the work. And if, as I said in the beginning, having a good story is, vital. And this process, for me, it opens up the story. It allows me to see the possibilities of the telling of this story and what it can evoke for people. Not the specifics of what it does evoke, but the endless possibilities of how people are free to have a sort of arising expression or association or memory or feeling that is less limited. And for me, when I'm working with people as storytellers, I spend a lot of time facilitating the preparation of the storyteller themselves. Because it is what, it's like, you have a flower that has petals, and it's so beautiful or so interesting. But then there's a center of the flower, which is actually, the Latin for it is something like hypoanthium iriflorescence, which is the place where all of the elements of the inside of the flower, beneath the flower, begins the blossoming. And that it's the storyteller who is not just reciting a story or making a point, but has really traveled the story internally to see what the possibilities are and keep looking at how the story functions so that we inhabit the story. It's almost like you're reaching through the story, like through the stem, through the petals, and the fragrance is reaching your listener, and your listener is having each person a very, very unique and rich experience. And the more relaxed we are, regardless of circumstance, the more that experience is very enriching. And that in itself sometimes releases natural properties in the mind or the body that can... It's where transformation occurs, where healing occurs. It doesn't occur on a conceptual level. Maybe in the immediacy we could say, oh, I have a solution, or I'll do this and everything will be fine, and then sort of change something, and then the next day you do it, like my endless, 35 years of going on the same diet. But so this is, we're talking about something that is, takes much more trust and really has to do with the storyteller being absolutely present, but also out of the way, in a sense, but not absent, not lost, but really there, and discovering what that place is, then the voice. And also part of, I think, part of our panic, particularly in these difficult times, arises from our speed and not actually slowing down enough to feel and listen. Because like what Leonard Cohen said, you know, it's when the, you know, you find the cracks where the light comes through. It takes some slowing down because we're so caught up with what we think is going to make the change or how we believe things. So this storyteller really can give people access to tremendous inner resources by themselves practicing a certain quality of mindfulness and awareness, or being present, being open to what's going on. So there's a lot of, you know, it's a very dynamic situation. And these conversations, particularly when, you know, you're there with people and can go deeper, sort of unlocking the, or harvesting the images that come up and so forth, can really relieve people tremendously from the sort of pressure or habitual desire to keep figuring it out, which sometimes could be a torment of mind, rather than, you know, letting it go and something fresh comes up that you didn't notice, or even the recognition of the poignancy of a situation and being able to hear everyone around you so that maybe together we would come up with something. And being heard, giving expression. These are aspects that I feel are genuinely transformative for us. I know that, I hope that's helpful. And you know, we have about 15 minutes maybe. If you have questions, answers, or thoughts about it, we could talk a little more. We could unmute. So was that helpful?
Laura, it was very helpful and very, very beautiful. Thank you. Can you talk a little bit more about how I would travel with that story and open it up?
Well, I would begin with exactly what we just did, where you could write, what did it remind me of in my life, and not so much what you think it's about, but an actual experience. Like, I will write an actual experience that comes to my mind. And sometimes that experience actually releases another experience. That's one way. And the other is to begin to harvest the images, to really, like doing a jazz riff and a research project on night, both from its almost sort of, you know, mythic image of darkness to even reading about light, the biology and science of light, and not coming up with a conclusion about the story, you know, not like, oh, this story is about such and such, or this story will do such and such, but keep opening it. Embers, fire, you know, the only character that we have in the story is the girl. So, young girl. The difference between a young girl and an old girl. Or an old woman. Here you have this kind of youth, freshness. somehow it's also not just the girl, but it's that quality of our minds. So the book that I just finished, actually yesterday, sometimes when I'm working on one thing, I distract myself by finishing something else. So the book that I wrote is called Wild Rose, and it's about a fairy tale. And I just kept looking at the images, every image, from the eagle to the basket, to the star, to the wild rose, to the stem, to the crown, the cauldron, the tripod. And when memories come up, I stop and write them down, because I want to find out what my own personal block is to the story, and also if I can see how much this story has brought up for me, I have a lot more confidence in telling it, knowing that for others they can have maybe a very different experience than I had, but a deep experience. And we have so few chances in our world that's so dedicated to coming up with solutions to things and interpretations and meanings that we very often miss this treasure house of our own deep resonant experiences that have insight for us. And then, so if I am so slow when I tell stories, which I am a lot of the time, because I love the knowing that the words are moving to someone else, and when they reach that other person, there's this almost like the, you know, the flowering of image and association and breathing and the heart, you know, which is now scientifically proved what people have known for thousands of years, that through the telling of the story, your heart actually begins to take a more natural beat. So, and that we learn to live with much more suspense and unknowing, and we can actually tolerate the mystery of not knowing, which gives us the opportunity to not fall into the despair of, you know, expectation and wanting to change everything. Sometimes we start to have another level of deep pleasure or joy, even in a difficult situation. Now, it's one of my great aims in working in the camp in Haiti, is just allowing people these breathing holes of finding a resource inside themselves that was not destroyed by the earthquake at all. In fact, it was untarnishable. So I can spend years on a story. I mean, I do. Sometimes I think, oh, I figured that out. And then sometimes even the next day I realize, oh, there's a whole other dimension, a whole other image, a whole other life force. I never have an interpretation that's finished. For me, it doesn't exist also because the story is in deep regard for where we've taken it, has resonance, and in the present, it's only living in the present between ourselves and the listeners. I've never memorized anything to such a degree that now, 40 years later, I can hardly remember my phone number. But there is a spontaneity of poetry which arises because of the connection between ourselves and the environment we're in and the listeners. Even the birds who are listening in the trees, there's the quality of everything coming alive. And I mean that in a very practical sense. Because the place where we're able to experience our connection, our relationship, is not the place of concept or theory. It is an experiential place that has intelligence. I have to be quiet now, so someone might have a question. Excuse me.
Laura, this is Elisa. And one thing that I notice a lot about being present in the telling is that if I can create or somehow the relationship with the audience, something happens, there's an opening in which in the moment of the telling, I'm very open to discovering things that are helpful to the listener and to myself that I might not have known. Is there anything that you, can you speak to that, the sort of how you might create that connection with the audience, with the listener, that helps facilitate that presence?
Well, I think, you know, there is a great Central Asian epic singer, and he said, first I tune myself, then I tune my instrument. I don't think we make the connection. I think a connection is what is natural. So the more present and open we are as human beings, which very often we really do have to practice because we are so prone to making an explanation about something and then thinking a feeling rather than having one. But it is an experience being present. And so we become more and more familiar with that. And being willing to be open, and you've done all the work on the story. I mean, I map stories, I outline them, I've really done a lot of work on it, not to memorize the story or come up with, you know, a single moral interpretation, but I've done a lot of work. So I don't have to worry about that. And I think then that place I was talking about, which you beautifully described, Alyssa, and other people actually have described it in what they said, that place is intelligent. It is sensitive. When we're in our bodies and present, our senses are functioning, and our senses, it's a very immediate and very multiple information is sent through the senses to the brain and the heart immediately. And so that's why it almost seems like a magic act while you're telling sometimes, where you have this sense of just what your audience needs. It's not something you can plan. It's the ordinary and heightened quality of perception and senses that are embodied and awake. That is how language, how relational space works. In Tibetan Buddhism, it's a whole study of how thought arises and the aspects of the senses. It's a beautiful book called True Perception, which describes how the artist prepares and works. It's been very influential in my life. But so I don't know, is that helpful? I is that helpful,
yeah,
to people? I don't have a recipe, especially in an hour conversation that where I'm not working and doing it, because since it is an experience, all I can do is sort of point at it.
Right.
But I take this extremely seriously because, especially given our situation in the world today, we can bring so much benefit. Not by, it doesn't have to be that we solve the world's problems, but we open access to the place where people don't forget their humanity and have access to certain intelligence and insight. And it is that place also where we can see other people and have compassion. We might not agree with what's going on, but we can still have compassion. Like your beautiful book, Alyssa, on forgiveness. And I know so many of us are working on these things in different ways. So excuse me if I'm saying things you already know. But
bless you, this is Joe. You know, it really has been helpful to have you express that. And I found in thinking about the last hour how genuinely generative the questions were. And I think that's an important element of your approach, is the engagement process that begins to build all that emotion and the bubble up, if you will. And that was just interesting to experience kind of the way you did it, and I appreciate that. So thank you.
Thank you so much, because I was so worried all day today. I got excited about doing it, and then suddenly, like, oh, can I do this on a telephone call?
Well, yeah, you can. The answer is you can, yeah.
Well, especially with such extraordinary people like all of you.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Other travelers.
Because it is a reciprocal. It's a reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, Alyssa, you asked, well, how do you make that happen? You know, there are situations where it's not really happening, or it doesn't happen, and to be open to that as well. And sometimes it is a lack in myself, and sometimes it's just the situation, and then I have to rely on something else. But over the years, the practice of doing things, of actually learning and continuing to deepen our familiarity with these qualities of mind and the responsibility we have as a storyteller, we become more facile. And I think what was a beautiful thing everybody said about the story that, you know, I think, Tony, you said, I think about what I could do for others, and I might be getting all of you mixed up, but, and someone else said, well, I think about, you know, what others can do for me. This story, it was generative, as you said, of talking about relationship. And sometimes despair or illness comes from not being able to go beyond ourselves, like shutting down or getting lost in our own process of trying to figure things out, or, you know, just endlessly tormented by our own sort of compulsive inner storytelling, suddenly being brought out. Sometimes when I'm teaching, I send people out on a walk to look at things and write about it. And people come back so refreshed because they have actually opened the senses. And in our world today, very often, you know, we're so caught up with digital things, which are so useful, they're so helpful to us, but we lose certain capacities when we rely only on that. So, you know, our children are losing certain capacities for empathy, even self-empathy. So we have to, through the storytelling, it's almost like a kind of alchemical repair.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I understand.
Beautiful.
Well said. Well said.
Laura, it is just past 10.
Oh, we should stop.
So if anyone has any one last thing.
Well, maybe everybody could just say one word, or just a word that you're taking away. Just to close. So you have to unmute. Just one word.
Well, I will say generative.
Gratitude.
What?
Gratitude.
Gratitude.
Connection.
Glowing.
What?
A spark.
Spark.
Glowing.
Glowing. Beautiful.
Oh.
Oh.
Pearls, P-E-A-R-L-S, pearls.
Oh, pearls, beautiful.
Laura, I think you said at one point in time that you have to harvest the images like a jazz riff. and I'm still thinking on that one, but that was a good collection of words, and I'm still thinking about that. But I did write it down because it was such a good combination of metaphors, so thank you for that.
Thank you, Laura, so much. And for everybody, thank you for joining us. And this call has been recorded. It will be up on our site within a couple of weeks. And please join us on the 25th for the Stories as Blueprints for Resistance and Solidarity. And let me know if you'd like to be in the swap. So thanks again,
and
Laura.
And if you want to be on my mailing list or read about the residencies, just send me an email at laurasoffice@yahoo.com.
Okay. Yep. I'll put that up on, I'll send that out as an email to everybody. Laura's office.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again, Laura. Good night.
And I hope that the good marriage conversation just radiates out to our world. Thank you.
Congratulations on your book.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And goodbye.
Goodbye. Thanks, Laura.
Is this Alyssa?
Yeah.
Hi.
That was so beautiful. We do need more than an hour with you.
A lot happened in that hour.
Yes.
Like that was like the muffins across the street. How many ingredients can go into one of those muffins? Become delirious.
Yeah.
You made a lot of people happy tonight, Laura. Thank you.
That's my job. Thank you.
And
we thank you so much for urging me to do this, Alyssa.
You are welcome. Now, did you say Laura's office?
Laura's
office at Gmail.
At Yahoo.com.
Yahoo. Okay.
I think that's the easiest email for people.
Okay. I'll put that up with the dates, which I found.
Thank you.
Okay, my dear.
Okay.
Take good care of yourself.
Yeah, thank you for doing this.
You're welcome.
Hey, bye. Guys, before you go, it's Jenny.
Hey, Jenny.
Jenny.
Hey, thank you so much. I would love to also...